Okay. So it's great to be back here again and working very hard. And even though I do work very hard being at the UN WASAC celebrations all day, it's still very wonderful to come here and talk about what I really love doing, which is like meditation. And all the things which I do, it's meditation is the best. It's the heart of what a monk does. And it's what gives you energy. It's also what gives you fun. It's also what gives you the understanding of what Buddhism truly is. This afternoon at the United Nations WASAC, there were monks from all the different traditions. You know, from the Hinayana, the Mahayana, the Vajrayana. But over in Australia, I've got another yana these days. I've tried to combine the Hinayana and the Mahayana. I've taken the H from Hinayana and the Ahayana from Mahayana to create the Hahayana. In other words, religion should be fun. The reason I say it should be fun is because when we practice Buddhism, we practice meditation, we keep precepts, if that makes us more miserable people, then that's obviously we're going in the wrong direction. If enlightenment is supposed to be the highest happiness, which is what the Buddha said, then surely that when we get closer and closer to enlightenment, we should be happier and happier people. That was so important to me when I was a young meditator to see that meditation actually made me happy. And that was so important because meditation was not something which you do like going to the gym and working out of guilt. It was something you did because you liked to do it, because you wanted to do it, because you saw immediate benefit and also long-term benefit. And it's those benefits from meditation, as the title of this talk tonight, the happiness through meditation. Now, of course, the happiness industry is very big in today's world. That people spend a lot of money sort of having therapists, you know, going out, enjoying yourself. And really, I don't know where people are going tonight on a Sunday night in Bangkok, but really, this is one of the happiest things you could be doing, to come and listen to a Buddhist talk. Not only that, it's cheap. So, even though it's cheap, it's very well worthwhile doing. And today I'm going to be talking about actually what meditation actually is and why it actually makes you happy. It was those monks who I meditated with and stayed with and learned with over those years. It's the ones which were happy were the ones who really impressed me. And it was later on when I started really getting into Buddhism and reading some of the teachings of the Buddha. Now from the suttas, I taught myself Pali so I can read them in the original Pali, which is even better than in translation. Now, one of my favorite teachings of the Buddha is the Dhammacetiya Sutta, which is from the Majjhima Nikaya. It literally means like monuments to the Dhamma. And in that particular teaching of the Buddha, there was a very famous supporter of the Buddha, a king, King Pasenadi, who went to visit the Buddha in the Jetavana monastery, the Jeta Grove monastery, outside of Sarvati. And he walked into the monastery and he asked the monks, "Where is the Buddha?" They said, "He's in his hut, but you're the king. If you knock on the door, he will probably let you in and you can talk to him." So the king knocked on the door of the hut where the Buddha was staying. The Buddha opened the door, and the king started bowing and kissing the Buddha's feet. And when the Buddha asked why, the king gave a long description of how throughout his life he enjoyed going to that monastery above all others. "Why, great king," said the Buddha, "do you enjoy coming to this monastery?" And the king said, "Because in this monastery, all the monks are always smiling and happy." And the Buddha said, "Yes, great king, that's what you can expect when the monks practice meditation and get the insights on the path." There the Buddha's confirming that you can tell a great monk by how happy they are. If you come across a miserable monk, I don't think they really understand the Dhamma. I'm saying that because in my life, before I became a Buddhist monk in the Thai tradition, there were many, many monks who came to visit England at that time. There are many monks from all the different traditions, and one of the reasons why I chose Thailand was because the Thai monks which I met at that time smiled the most. And I thought, if I want to give my life to being a monk, I want to follow that tradition, a tradition of happiness. And that wasn't a happiness which comes just through the ordinary means, because that happiness which comes through the ordinary means of life, of getting what you want, you know, falling in love, getting married, getting rich, your football team wins the cup, that's a lot of suffering, watching soccer. That's one of the reasons I became a monk, to forget all the suffering of watching soccer. It is true that I remember when I was teaching at a school, it was a World Cup soccer. What would that be? That would be 1974, I think. Yeah, I think, just before I left to come to Thailand. And there was a match between England and Poland. And England only needed to win just by a goal, and they would go through to the finals. And it was a close match. Poland scored first, and then the second half, England equalized. And then they hit the crossbar, and they had penalties disallowed. And in the end, they could only draw, and they were out. Oh, the next day when I went to school, the children, there was no discipline problems at all. They didn't even speak before the class. All the children and all the other teachers were depressed. I thought, it's only a football match. Why is the whole country depressed just because someone loses at soccer? You know, some people cry when their team loses. That's a silly thing, just to get happy and you look at something like a World Cup soccer. I think there's about 32 teams or 64 teams, I don't know how many, get into the final. Say 32 teams get into the final. 31 teams lose and go back with suffering. And only one team goes back happy, and that's only for how long, maybe 2 or 3 days? The odds are not worth it. That's why it's a waste of time looking for happiness there, but looking for happiness inside by meditating is a wonderful way of learning how to be truly happy. But actually, that once I decided we should actually form a Buddhist soccer team, which runs according to Dhamma. Because in a Buddhist soccer team, because we've got great compassion, if the other team wants the ball, you can actually give it to them. And if they can't score a goal themselves, we'll score it for them. Own goals. We might not win very many matches, but we're very good Buddhists because we let go and we're kind. That's why we don't have Buddhist soccer teams. It's the same with, I don't know, I think there's people from many good families here today. And I told this in Singapore, where I go very often, because sometimes you push your children too hard, especially at school. And so I told in Singapore recently that if any of your children come in the top 5% or the bottom 5% at school, they're not good Buddhists. They come in the top 5%, not good Buddhists, nor in the bottom 5%, because in Buddhism we believe in the middle way. If they come in the middle, then they're the best Buddhists. Because the importance in life is actually to be happy. Not to be successful, but to be happy first. The priorities, we have to get them right. And this is something which is common sense to me as a monk, especially as a teacher for many years. That a research which was done in the United States, very simple research, but the results were so conclusive, it's very well worthwhile repeating many times. Some sociologists, together with psychologists, wanted to find out what comes first in life, success or happiness. Because many people think that you have to be successful first to have a good business, make enough money, get your car, get a nice partner in life, have kids. Now get settled first of all, and then you put off happiness till later. However, the research shows what I know as truth from my experience, what is common sense. That is not the right way. happiness comes first. It is happy people who are successful. It's not successful people who are happy. Now that's a powerful little teaching, because sometimes we think we need to get the success first of all, to get the results at school, to get the loving relationship, to get the good health, to get the whatever else you want in life. But really, happiness has to come first. And it's been shown again and again that if your children are happy, if you are happy, then success comes as a natural consequence of your happiness. But if you're unhappy, you're usually encouraging and inviting non-success, failure. So happiness is so important for success in life. We should give that priority. Happiness first, and your success in life will come next. But the point is, how do we become happy so that we can become successful? And obviously, happiness is a state of mind. It has nothing to do with the world outside. You cannot change the world, but you certainly can change your attitude towards the world. And that's the very old truth. Sometimes, you know, they may have arguments in life. Sometimes people may criticize you or curse you. They may call you names. You may be sick, but you may be unsuccessful. You may even have a breakup in your partnership. It doesn't matter. Don't allow that to spoil your day. I was telling in Singapore, I remembered when my girlfriend dumped me. Oh, that was so painful. But looking back now, what a wonderful thing that was. If she'd have stayed with me, I might never become a monk. So don't let these little things in life control your happiness. This is actually one of the sayings which I made up and which has helped a lot of people. Never let other people, what they do or what they say. Don't even allow the news you read in the newspapers or even your health control your happiness. That your happiness is independent. It doesn't live out in the world. It doesn't live in the health of your body or the success of your business. Happiness lives in your heart, in your mind. And you can be happy no matter what you're going through. And how you do that is through the practice of meditation. It's a strange thing, but the meditation puts the emphasis on what's really important, on the inner world. Because too often we're just focused just on the life outside, whether it's our studies, whether it's our business, whether it's our health, our relationships, or the world. It's important to spend time doing your duties, serving the world, but isn't it important sometimes to spend time with yourself? People who know how to spend time with themselves, not doing very much, but just sitting down and resting, know how to live efficiently, successfully, and happily in their life. What meditation is, like using an old simile of the journey, sometimes in our life we're always journeying on to the next thing. We never actually stay where we are long enough to rest. When you're at school, you're going on to the next year, the next exam, the next stage, the next subject. Then you go and go out with girls or with boys. Then you go on to the next girl, and then the next girl. You finally get married. Then you go on to the next stage in your life, having kids or going off into the workforce. Have you ever noticed that you are always being on the move? Always going on to the next thing in life? And sometimes people don't stop forever in their life, always going on to the next thing, the next thing, the next thing. I always joke that that's why many old people go to the temples. It's the same in the churches as well. Old people go to the temples because they're so close to death, they're going on to the next thing. Heaven, they hope, please. But instead of going on to the next thing, can't we actually stop life's journey and just rest a while? Because that's what meditation is, it's resting. I call that R.I.P., resting in peace. And I think you all know when I call it R.I.P., in many countries, the only time that people have an opportunity to R.I.P. is when they're dead. Isn't that the case? We always say, oh, may you rest in peace, or they're in peace now. It's a bit late to wait till then. Why don't you have a bit of peace now, when you can enjoy it? So in order to do that, we want to R.I.P. now, to rest in peace, which is what meditation is. So you're all practicing how to die when we meditate. You're finding out what it's like to be dead, to be a corpse, to do nothing. Because that's what meditation is all about. Learning how to stop moving. And just to be where you are. This is what meditation is. To stop moving, I use these similes. You see this cup of water here. There's many similes with a cup of water. This is not the how heavy it is simile, because I gave that last time. This is a simile of how I can keep this glass of water still. Now those of you in the front row who are very, very close, you can see when this water is still. So now I'm going to concentrate. I'm going to meditate. I'm going to hold this water absolutely still. Here I go. Is it still yet? I'll try harder. Is it still yet? I'll try harder. Is it still yet? This is how many people meditate. They never know stillness. They can meditate and meditate, and they just get frustrated. Now, there's a very easy way to meditate, and a very easy way to get this glass of water absolutely still. What is it? Yeah, put it down. Now, when I put it down, it moves more. When you let go, the mind gets more restless. But after a few seconds, is that still now? It's absolutely still. I could never hold it that still. It's so easy to do. It's no effort at all. I can just rest, just watch this water, and it does not move. That's how meditation works. We have to learn how to put down our mind, to let go of all control, of all doing, and just to make peace with the moment, to learn how to not do anything, to rest. We're going on a journey, now we have to sit down. Go nowhere, do nothing, let things be. Open the door of your heart to this moment unconditionally. This moment is good enough. Leave it alone, and it gets still all by itself. It's so easy to meditate, except people are too stupid to do it. I'm being quite frank, because we always get involved. We are what we call in the West control freaks. Because everything you've ever achieved in your life, which has been worthwhile, you've worked hard for it. And now I'm telling you, don't work at all. And it gets very still. I'll tell a story. This is from my 6th year as a monk. It's an embarrassing story, but it needs to be told because it shows what I mean about letting go. In the 6th year I was a monk, I found a nice monastery in Chiang Mai, in Medang district. Just at that time, it was just below the Raming tea plantation. So I got a full supply of tea every day, which was very nice, being an English monk. You know how we like our tea. That's one of the reasons why I followed Ajahn Chah. That's not a very good joke, but nevertheless. But anyway, this monastery was absolutely perfect for meditation. It had a beautiful cave ways to stay most of the day. Except during the rains retreat when the monsoons came, I just had to leave the cave. It was actually during the wasa, the pantsa, the rains retreat, when I had the monastery all to myself. It was idyllic in those days. It was remote and quiet. And the lay people in the north of Thailand, in the mountains, they didn't really want to listen to any Dhamma. And that suited me fine. All I needed to do was to go an alms round every morning. And the alms round, I went over a hill to the next valley. There was a village of maybe 6 or 7 houses, that's all. And they would fill my bowl, it was only one monk, with very nice food. I would talk to them, give a blessing, and then walk back over the hill into solitude for the rest of the day. And the traffic problem, was if I was looking, I would see the one car which came up every week. If I wasn't looking, I'd miss it. That was the traffic, one car per week. So it was ideal solitude. And I had such a wonderful time for the first few weeks until I started getting restless. When I started getting restless, being at that time still a young monk, when my mind started thinking, you can guess what it started thinking about. What I call unmonkish thoughts. Thoughts of old girlfriends, about romance, even sex. And I never wanted to think such thoughts because I was a committed monk. But these thoughts kept coming into my mind, and I tried to stop them. And the more I tried to stop them, the worse it got. And because I was staying alone, I never had a teacher to ask any questions from, and Ajahn Chah was too far away. After a while, I started thinking I was losing it and going mad and crazy. And I remember one day, I couldn't stop these thoughts coming into my mind. So I went down into the sala, into the main hall. There was a Buddha statue there. I bowed 3 times and I just, Aditan, I asked for some help. And straight away the idea came into my mind, let's do a deal. Because I was a Westerner, that's what Westerners do a deal. And the deal was this, that for 23 hours of a day, I would behave myself and I'd watch my breath. For 1 hour each day, from 3 till 4 in the afternoon, anything goes time. If I wanted to think of old girlfriends, sex, romance, whatever, from 3 to 4, that's when I could think about it. I thought that was fair enough. If my mind wanted to think about those things, from 3 to 4, the rest of the day, you behave. However, it never worked as I expected. The mind was still as wanton as ever. I tried to control it. It was just wouldn't behave. A thought would come in, I'd throw it out, it would come back in again. And it was so tiring when you're fighting with the mind. But then I decided, 3 o'clock came, I had to keep the other part of the bargain. I went up to the hut where I was staying in, leant against the wall, put my feet out because I was tired. And I said, okay, you can think whatever you want now. And for the next hour, I watched every in-breath and out-breath without missing one. It was so easy. And I learned a great lesson from that experience. What I learned was when you try and control the mind, you're making it more restless. When you let it be, let it go, like putting down the glass, it becomes still all by itself. This is a teaching of Ajahn Chah, which I don't think I've read in any book. It came from the first year I was in Wat Pa Phong. This was before Wat Nanachat was started. Ajahn Chah would go around saying, his monastery is like a mango orchard. He said that those mango trees have been planted by the Buddha. It was a simile. And he said those mango trees are already mature, and they are all full of ripe mangoes. And he told us, you monks don't even need to climb the tree, nor shake it, nor throw up any sticks. All you have to do these days, says Ajahn Chah, is put out your hand and a mango will fall into it. That's what Ajahn Chah said at that time. Of course, I didn't understand a word of what he said. How can you get the mangoes, the fruits of peace, enlightenment, by doing nothing? Like many other young monks, I would try and climb that tree, try and shake it, or throw sticks up to try and get the fruits of the path. For Ajahn Chah was saying, this great monk, say no, every time you shake that tree, the mangoes do not fall. When you're still, then the mango falls. Meditation is the art of being still. Putting things down, letting them go, not moving. And then you find how to be at peace. But it's more than being at peace, it's also learning how to be happy as well. Because one of the things I found, this is again from the early years in Thailand, and Ajahn Jayasaro at the front here will appreciate this. In those days we used to get up at 3 o'clock in the morning. But it was, even in those days, it was always optional. We could always get up earlier than 3 o'clock if we wanted to. But not later. And at 3 o'clock in the morning, you go down into the hall and we had to do morning chanting, translated into Thai. Oh, and that was so... And after doing that, we'd meditate until it was time for alms round. And like many other young monks, it was so hard to meditate at that time in the morning. Remember that this body here was made in England. It's got it underneath here, made in England. I was used to the cool, and now I was in the hot, steaming jungles of Thailand. We were malnourished in those days. We used to eat frogs on rice, you know that story. I remember some days when we used to, there's many frogs on rice stories, but this is the best, that when this one meal a day, that's all we had to eat. And this one day there was no fruit, there was no vegetables, there was no curries, all we had was a ball of sticky rice with one frog on top. That was your meal for the day. And like many other monks in the line there, maybe about 10 of us there at the time, we just picked at the meat on the legs. Now, this is a good lesson for people who are still at school. I was very diligent at school. I remembered my biology, so I knew what organ was which. But the monk sitting next to me, he obviously did not pay any attention to biology. Because when he was picking at the frog, he pressed the frog's bladder. The bladder still had urine inside, and that frog peed all over his rice. That was gross. Now that's what we mean by how hard it was in those days. But it was, I realized why. Why I was so sleepy. I was in a hot climate I wasn't used to. I was only sleeping four and a half hours every night. I was sleep deprived. I was malnourished in a climate which was so hot. What do you expect? Except being sleepy. But I decided to fight my sleepiness, to take it on, to fight a war with it. And what I found is when I fought sleepiness, when you did break through, I was restless. I kept on thinking. So I said, calm down. And as soon as I calmed down, I fell asleep again. And it was always between restlessness and sloth and torpor. And I couldn't figure out what the problem was. Nowadays, when I teach a retreat, I tell people, look, if you really, really are tired, go and take a rest. Because you know Ananda, the disciple of the Buddha, it was when he decided to take a rest, that's when he became enlightened. You know that story? So we call that the Ananda method of meditation. One day it might work. But no, seriously, the reason we do this, I tell people, if you're really tired, just rest. It's nature. any sloth and torpor or restlessness which you have to deal with in meditation. We call that the result of old karma. It's nature. You're tired because there's been causes. You're restless because of causes. You're thinking a lot because of causes in the past. You cannot change the past. Your job in meditation is what you're doing now with what you have to deal with. This is a trick in meditation. In this present moment, whether you are sleepy or alert, in pain, or just very peaceful, it does not matter what you are experiencing. The trick of meditation is, how are you experiencing that? What are you doing with what you're experiencing? In other words, you make peace with whatever you're experiencing in your mind. Let it be. Say to this moment, whether you're sleepy or thinking or restless, the door of my heart is open to this moment, unconditionally. For those of you who know your Buddhism, there is something we call the Eightfold Path. There's something we call the second factor of that Eightfold Path, which is right intention. And the Buddha actually taught that right intention is thoughts of letting go, thoughts of kindness, and thoughts of gentleness. Letting go, kindness, and gentleness. Too often people forget that factor of the Buddha's teachings. When you're meditating, please be a Buddha. Be kind, be gentle. Don't go at meditation like a US Army Marine. That's not the way. If you try that, you'll get what they call collateral damage. You get more stressed out. It's an interesting question I was asked in Bali in February. Someone said, why, when people go to Buddhist temples to meditate, do they come back more angry than when they went in? And I thought, gee, what type of meditation is that? But the monk I was with at the time gave this beautiful answer. He said, because people go to those temples, even to meditate, they go there to get something rather than to let go of things. If you're meditating to get something, you're not letting go. You'll never get the peace, the tranquility, the freedom, and the happiness of meditation. So when you're meditating, don't try and get rid of things. Don't try and get things. Meditate just to be at peace with things. And you will find this meditation becomes so easy. Going back to the simile of like a journey, walking on the journey of your life, meditation for beginners is like stopping and sitting down on a rough, stone, cold bench. It's not the best of places to sit down on. It's rough, it's cold, it's hard. But you might as well sit down there because that's all you have. You stop in this present moment. But what happens with meditation, when you stop, that place where you stop, that in this simile, the stone bench, it naturally becomes softer and more comfortable the longer you stay there. That's actually how meditation works. When you become still, at first it's uncomfortable. Wait a while, and it gets more and more peaceful, more and more happy, more and more enjoyable. To make the point that my first meditation retreat I ever did was in Cambridge, still as a student. Now at this time was 1970 it was. And at that time we decided, the group which I was meditating with, decided to hire 2 boarding houses for students. It was during vacation time, they were vacant and cheap. But the problem was, the food was going to be cooked by the boarding house cooks. Now in the 1970s and before, I don't know if there's any other English people here, but the country of England was not exactly well known for its ability to cook delicious food. In fact, the English were known for their inability to cook anything except cook the books. But I always remember the meals were always like meat and two veg, or stodge, stodge and stodge. You had to put gravy and sauces on them to get any taste out of them. Everything was boiled until there was no taste left. Now, of all the cooks and chefs in that country, the very worst, the bottom of the pile, were those cooks who were employed in boarding houses for poor students. So I thought, oh my goodness, this meditation retreat is going to have terrible food. Perhaps I should take some sandwiches. Those were the days before you could actually order pizzas for dial-up, otherwise I'd have ordered things. I thought, wow, this is going to be terrible food. But I was so surprised. I was so pleased that the food on that retreat was actually tasty. It was delicious. And I couldn't think why. Perhaps I thought, because of my good karma, I had the best cook in all the boarding houses in that country. But that wasn't the case. It was nothing to do with the food, but everything to do with my meditation. Because my mind was still, it actually started picking out more of the tastes. The little amount of flavors which were left after all that boiling and steaming, I could pick up. And I know that these days even. If you have a good meditation, your food tastes more delicious. So the moral of that story is, I know how much Thai people like eating. Next time you go out for an expensive restaurant, meditate for half an hour beforehand to get your money's worth. You'll enjoy your food even more. Because what's happening here is you're learning how to become more sensitive. The following simile, I think I said this last year, but it's a very important simile. It's one of the key similes which I use to describe meditation. My monastery in Perth is on top of a hill, 2.1 kilometers from the bottom of the road. For 9 years, I'd always gone up and down that hill in a car. On this day, I decided to walk up that hill for exercise and also because it was a nice day. When I walked up that hill, I could not recognize my surroundings. They looked completely different. And that shocked me. If you don't believe me, the house which you live in, if you've always gone out of that house and back again in a vehicle, one day walk down that soil, and you'll see things you've never noticed before. It was a strange experience for me to notice things I hadn't seen. It was so strange and weird, I stopped still and stared, and then I started seeing even more things. At first I couldn't understand, but then I used just reflection. Why is it I could not see those things when I was looking through the window of a moving car? The answer is that when you look through the window of a moving car, the light which reaches the back of your eye does not have sufficient time to form a proper image before it has to receive a new image. So the images do not properly form and your mind doesn't have enough time to explore it. But you think you know. As you slow down, the light has more time to form an image on your retina. When you stop still, only then do you have the full amount of time to stop and see. That's why the slower you go, the more you see. The other thing I noticed, that when I slowed down and stopped, the colors which I saw were much richer and deeper, and they were more beautiful. Again, it was because those colors had more time to establish themselves. And I realized the problem of many people where they don't have any happiness in life is because we go too fast through our life. We live life as if looking through the window of a moving vehicle, which is called our body, our life. We never stop long enough to really pick out all the beauty, the depth, the richness in life. Even our food, we stuff it into our mouth while we're talking about something else. We're too fast in life. When we go fast, the colors are like washed out. The taste, we can hardly taste them. Even life, we don't really know life. We're never here. We like looking through the window of a moving car. We see so little, we appreciate so little. You find when you slow down, not only do you see more, you feel more deeply, the colors are richer, life is actually more enjoyable. By slowing down, you're getting more energy. This is what even the Buddha said, what Ajahn Chah would often say. To have a strong, healthy, energetic body, you have to exercise it. To have a strong mind, you have to keep it still. That stillness gives you energy. And that energy is what we call happiness. This is where happiness comes from, the stillness of the mind. And that gives a very deep and profound explanation to one of the great problems of our modern world. One of the great diseases of our world is called depression. So many people suffer from clinical depression, and they have to go and see therapists, psychiatrists, doctors who give medicines. Really, you shouldn't get to that stage. Even these days, in many countries, people are solving that problem with a combination. When it gets very bad, you do need medication. But if it hasn't got that far, even with medication, to also solve it with meditation and what we call cognitive therapy, looking at life in different ways. Even the person I was talking about today at the UN WASAC. One of my friends was the former Premier of Western Australia, Dr. Jeff Gallop. He was the head politician of that state, and being a federal system in Australia, he wielded a lot of power. He was very popular. He resigned about 15 months ago because he announced he had depression. Now, he is working as a professor in the University of New South Wales, writing an article every week in The Australian. He gives lectures about depression. And when he gives lectures about how he overcame depression, he said it was using Buddhist philosophy, and he quotes the stories from my book, Open the Door of Your Heart, and meditation. He's a disciple. And it's a very important disciple to have. Because of his success in treating his depression with meditation, he is a patron of my meditation center project. And it's important to have him as our patron because he was also a very close friend to Tony Blair. In fact, it was in Chequers in the Christmas New Year of 2005-2006, he was staying with his friend Tony Blair, where he decided he had clinical depression. Because he was Tony Blair's best man at the wedding with Cherry. That's how close they are. So now I've got Tony Blair as the, now I've got Jeff Gallop as the patron of my meditation center. Once it's built, I'm sure he will come to meditate there. I'm hoping he'll bring his best friend, Tony Blair, as well. And once I get Tony Blair to meditate, then it's only a short step before we get Tony Blair's best friend to come to meditate, which is George W. Bush. Once we've got George W. Bush, we save the world. I like to fantasize. and to dream. But anyhow, the thing about Jeff Gallup is true. He's a prominent Australian, and he solved his depression with meditation. And this is how it works. The reason why people do get depressed is because we are control freaks. We do so much. And when we control and do so much, there comes a time when we meet frustration. Things we cannot control, whether it's our family life, whether it's our work life, whether it's our health, we always come across these barriers. And what happens mostly is we work harder, we try and force our way through. Sometimes it works, but eventually you'll come across a barrier you cannot cross, and because of all that effort you put in, you get frustrated, angry as well, and after frustration and anger, the next stage is depression. You give up. When you get that part of life, it's very hard to get out of that depression again. It's much better to stop that earlier by not fighting so much, learning how to sit down, let go, and be at peace. When there's nothing to do, do nothing. Give yourself a moment of peace every day of your life. Then you will find by resting, you can walk further after your rest. But when you go work, 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 without any mental rest at all, you're going to get tired, worn out. You're not going to be successful in life. You're going to be a problem to yourself and others. If we can only give ourselves those moments of rest in meditation, gee, we'll be happy, successful people. Because when you get a bit of peace and you get still, the energies come back into your mind. To understand again, there's two parts of the human mind. The two parts of the human mind, if you like, in Buddhism, is the sankhara and vijnana. The sankhara, the will, this is what I call the doing mind, which is always thinking, controlling, making things happen. That consumes most of your energy. The other half of the mind is a passive mind, which just knows, which can see, which can hear, but which does not react. It just knows what's happening. That passive mind just does not get much energy at all, because it all gets used up in the work you have to do. Now what happens in meditation? We are not doing anything. We are subduing the will, the controller, the doer, the one which is always moving on to the next thing. When you can do that, suppress that will, suppress that doing, make peace with the moment, the door of my heart is open to this moment, let it be, you will find that the energy starts flowing into knowing rather than into reacting. It flows into mindfulness. You become more awake, more alert, more energized. This is how I get my energy. When I get tired, I just stop. I stop controlling, stop doing anything. I just stay there in the moment. And the energies come back very quickly. If I start fighting, then I get tired out. So when you can, just allow energies to go into pure mindfulness, just knowing, not reacting and doing, you find you become awake, alert, you become energized. And that energy, you can see how much energy I have. It's not the cup of tea I had just a few moments ago. That was only, I call that vitamin T, but that's not really what I mean by energy. You get your energy from meditation. By the still mind, you get empowered. And that energy of the mind gives you happiness and joy. The two go together. So when you're peaceful, the mind gets energized. When it gets energized, it gets very powerful and happy. And this is actually what we mean by the happiness through meditation. The happiness through stillness. The food tastes better, you see deeper into life. Even, this happened to a person who went on my recent retreat over Easter. When she went back, she came and saw me a few days later. He said, my husband did not want me to go on retreat because he was going to miss me. But when she came back from the retreat, she was so good as a wife, he was very, very impressed and asked her to go again. Simply because his wife became happier after she'd been on a retreat. So if you have a miserable wife, please send her to please send her to the next retreat. If you've got a grumpy husband, I'll look after that. And I'll send you a much better model after they return. Because this is what it happens. It's great actually teaching meditation and seeing just people change over the days they meditate. First of all, they get very tired. I tell them, rest. Don't work so hard. It's all about letting go, relaxing. Meditation is not tough. I know that people, this is actually one of the sayings of the Buddha. And I love this saying. He said, Buddhism is a path without groaning. If you groan, 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 that's not the middle way. It's a path without groaning. It's a happy path. That's what Buddhism is supposed to be in the words of the Buddha. I know that many people, they do what's called breath meditation. And what you know what that's called in Pali? Anapanasati. Have you heard that before? What many people do, they don't do Anapanasati. They practice Anapanasati. They just make it painful for themselves. Please, when you meditate, if you get a sore knee, just change your posture. The Buddha never recommended people to sit cross-legged in full lotus on broken glass. This is a gentle, peaceful, soft, kind path. You're gentle, you're kind, you're peaceful to every moment when you're meditating. You're letting things be. You're putting down the glass, the burdens. You're not thinking of the past or the future. That's sometime in the future, who cares? You're not carrying anything around. The first stage of meditation, becoming the present moment. I often tell new meditators a simile. You've got two heavy suitcases. The first suitcase is all your past. All the things which have happened to you so far in your life. And you carry that around almost every moment of your day. The suitcase in the right hand stands for your future, which you also carry around with you. Your fears and expectations are what you've got to do next. In meditation, we learn how to lower those two suitcases to the ground. You don't throw them away. That's being irresponsible. You imagine all the things which have happened to you so far in life and how heavy they are to carry around. You imagine feeling their weight, lowering it to the ground until the weight disappears. Moving your hand away from the handle. By doing that imaginary mental exercise, psychologically it helps for you to let go of your concern about the past. Then imagine what it's like in your right hand, this heavy weight in your right hand representing all the things you're worried about, afraid about, concerned about next. You lower that to the ground as well until there's no more weight. You've let go of the future and the past. Why not? For 10 minutes, half an hour. You can pick them up again afterwards. But you have to let them get down to give yourself a rest. And you feel, wow, it's so peaceful being in this moment. You're not moving in time. You're being still. Even that much gives you a lot of happiness and energy. And then you learn how to stop moving in thought. If you never have had a moment of silence, you are now going to experience silence. Because I want you to listen, as I am speaking, to what's happening in your mind as I am speaking in this strange way. In those gaps between my words, you were silent. Because you never knew when I was going to speak next. You are what we call waiting mindfully in this moment. You are still. It's not that hard if you know how to do it. You just wait in this moment. There's nothing going on in your mind. You're still, you're peaceful. Isn't that nice? You're realizing in that stillness, when the mind isn't thinking, you have some peace. When you get used to that more and more, that stillness becomes so wonderful and lovely. It builds up in energy. You have happy mindfulness. You're not going anywhere. You're being where you are. And the more you are still, the more that energy of mindfulness grows. If you're going into breath meditation, it's so easy. The reason why people have difficulty watching the breath, they go onto the breath too soon. They have to force their way onto the breath. You're controlling, you're not letting go. You do it gently, peacefully. It's so easy. Sometimes the breath just comes to you. So soft, so nice. You don't do anything, you just stay there. And the breath changes by itself. Because of your stillness, just like when I stopped and got out of the car and walked, and then stood still, I could see so much beauty in an ordinary hillside. I could taste so many flavors in this terrible food in England 35 years ago. In the same way that you can just watch a breath and it becomes the most beautiful thing you've ever seen. It's nothing to do with the breath, it's because of your stillness. It becomes beautiful. When that becomes beautiful, the happiness just grows and grows and grows. For those of you who ever get to such states of meditation, don't do anything. Don't spoil it. Your job is to remain in stillness by not reacting, not controlling. Just completely letting go as much as you possibly can. Just like that cup of water, because I haven't touched it for such a long time, it's perfectly still. In the same way that when you don't touch the mind and don't interfere with it, all these incredible powerful stages of meditation, they just come and visit you. You just sit there and the breath becomes so beautiful. You get these wonderful lights in the mind we call the nimittas. The nimittas become such of the most powerful, beautiful things you've ever seen. Sometimes people, when they get into those deep meditations, when they come out afterwards, they've got so much energy they can't sleep. They don't want to sleep, they've got too much happiness. Sometimes they just cry out of bliss. It's nature for the mind to do this. You don't have to be a monk to experience these stages. It's one of my great joys as a monk, when people who meditate get into these deep states for the first time. Even my last retreat in Easter, a lady who's been meditating for a while, she got into a wonderful deep state of meditation. And it's the only thing I can compare it with, it's not a good comparison, is when people fall in love. You know what it's like when young people fall in love? Oh, she's so wonderful. I love her and she loves me. Oh! It's like that, only without another partner. You've got this beautiful, peaceful, joyful happiness, the biggest bliss in the world. Simply because you've allowed the mind to be still and energy has come and grown and grown and grown. Then you know what energy is really like, what awareness is like. How meditation makes you so, so happy and powerful. And how it can relieve those sicknesses, the physical sicknesses, the tiredness. As it said in the United States from Harvard, it actually meditators, their cortex, their brain gets bigger. It grows. You literally get more gigabytes between your ears through meditation. Not only that, you get happier. Isn't that a wonderful thing? It means you don't need Prozac anymore. You just go to the temple instead. You get happier, more beautiful, and you have more fun in life. It doesn't cost anything. It's healthy. What a wonderful thing to be able to share with others. How to stop Be still, be happy, and see so deeply into life. It means that if you have a partner, in that stillness you can see more beauty in her. You can see more you can respect in him. Because of your stillness and the way you look, you don't tend to have this negative mind which always sees the faults in yourself and other people. Because of happiness, you appreciate and respect others. And you also appreciate yourself. You literally make peace with life itself. This is what we mean by happiness, by freedom, by being so content. You stop, you rest, and your energies come back again. When you're energized and at peace, then you are happy. That's how we get happiness through meditation. Thank you very much.